Hey guys, welcome back in
to welcome.
The Out of Our Minds podcast. I'm like really digging these more casual vibes.
I'm loving it.
Love.
It's great. I love it.
Love, love, love. I was listening to our episode 30. Which one did you release today?
37.
I was listening to that as I was making my smoothie this morning, and I was just like, good shit.
I love. It's funny like to think that we like listen back to our episodes and we're just like, nice, good point.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't listen to them, and sometimes I do. It just depends.
You're like,
on,
wow,
like,
this is a great podcast.
But today we're gonna be doing a little reaction video. Essentially, we're gonna be playing a Gaia 26-minute clip. I mean, it's not a clip. It's a full episode from a show that's on Gaia called Divine Science. I'm pretty sure it's new. I don't know.
Yeah, it looks new.
I think
new.
It is. And there's 5 or 6 episodes in it. And one of them is called Consciousness Made Real, The Thought Effect. And I actually watched it the other day. And while I was watching it, I texted Bella and I'm like, we have to do a reaction video with this 26-minute episode. So we're going to be playing the clip. And then we're going to be pausing it. We're going to be reacting to it. Kind of like how we did that other time with, what was that guy's name that we did the YouTube reaction to?
Randall Carlson.
Yeah.
Love that guy.
And the topic, I'm just like feeling so into this topic lately. I feel like I touched on this when I was FaceTiming you yesterday, that you really unlock such a different level of inner power when you understand the quantum world and how our thoughts affect the creation of matter.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a scientist to dive into this stuff and still be mind blown by it.
Right.
But I do remember when I was first learning about it, it kind of just would go right over my head. And I don't even think they go into deep science in this episode. I can't remember. But I've been loving diving into like the science. I just started reading this book called The Field, where this girl literally channeled all this information about like the fucking metaphysics of the field and how to communicate and create your own reality by understanding like the science behind it. So yeah, what's your view on all this before we dive in?
Yeah, I mean, I fucking love it. I definitely have those seasons where I like tap in and out and I like go in and try to like study more of it, understand it. And there's definitely an unparalleled feeling of when you're reading a book or watching a video on it and it's clicking. Mm. So when it starts to click and you're tying it to your daily actions, it just gives a little more of like a spark to the things that you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's so powerful for just empowering yourself, feeling like you can do anything. Like you really just become more convinced that this shit works, which is so key, because that's really the biggest part of it is the belief, and even like a casual belief, if that makes sense. Like you don't have to be like, you don't have to force the belief. It's kind of just being like, okay, yeah, like literally if I just align my thoughts with my energy and this and that, then like of course it's gonna happen. So it puts you more in that manifestation energy of law of attraction, law of assumption, and being able to live that frequency more. And this is perfect timing too, because I've been trying to make more conscious decisions around my consumption, which I feel like I've been on that journey for so long, but especially now I'm really looking forward to, yeah, just watching things like this. And I've always had a curiosity towards the sciences, but for a long time I had a belief that I was bad at science because I like failed chemistry in high school. And I like always struggled with like the hard sciences in general. But I actually think that I could be really good at it. So,
yeah, I feel like this is a rabbit hole that you would love to go down.
Yeah, for sure. I really feel like I will be pulled into like deep study of quantum mechanics one day.
Oh,
and I
gives me chills.
I don't know. It's funny because like currently I'm so not good at explaining. Maybe someone would think that I am, but I personally don't think I'm good at explaining the science behind things. But I know that it's like a big piece of the puzzle for me is to dive into that work. And a lot of I've been learning more about other 1/4s, like human design 1/4s. And they're all people who are like really deep into science and spirituality. So I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Even Sarah, she's a 1-3, I think I sent you the...
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
Gotta research.
Yeah. Yeah, but I can't remember if this episode is very sciencey or not. I think this is more so introducing the topic of your thoughts creating your reality. And I've come to learn, before we dive in, I want to like kind of keep talking about this, and I'm sure we'll go into more conversation throughout pausing the episode, but you hear these things, right? Like, thoughts create your reality, or like, energy is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And with every level of like new awareness you gain, a new perspective that you gain, these statements carry so much more weight to them in a good way. And I think when I first started learning about manifestation and thoughts creating reality, yes, I was diving into the work and I was reading all the Joe Dispenza stuff, and conceptually I would understand it. But something hits different when you're watching these shows on Gaia, and I can't remember if this is one of them, where they're bringing you through science experiments and explaining it in a way where you actually understand on like an atomic level what is happening when someone is observing a particle and it's collapsing from a wave into matter. And you're just like, oh my God, all these big little like spiritual woo-woo statements kind of like fall and collapse into these like actual logical science-based facts,
right?
And you're like, oh, that's what that means.
yeah it really gives that is what I found. I swear, this is, I feel like, been a theme of my life and for the both of us for the past few months, is you're like, there's levels to this shit. Like, you learn it and you're like, that makes sense, I got that,
and it doesn't stop.
And it doesn't stop, and you're like, oh, that's what it means. Oh, no,
that's what it means.
Yeah, yeah. And you're like, oh, shit, like, this really goes. Like, it really goes in. Yeah, it's really, yeah, I feel that.
All right, should we dive into this? So here we go, consciousness made real, the thought effect. Raise your hand when you want me to pause.
Okay.
Teacher, I have a question.
Divine science emerges.
Turn it up.
Could the power of thought literally reshape the universe around us? Imagine if every whisper of the mind had the potential to alter the fabric of reality itself. This intriguing possibility challenges our understanding of the mind's relationship with the physical world. What profound secrets might we unlock about our inner power and our unique impact on reality?
I think that the idea that thoughts can help shape the world around us has two points that we can really look at. One is ancient metaphysical teachings that have always said that the mind is all, and that the physical world around us is created through thoughts within the mind of the all. Then, in modern days, we also have quantum physics. And quantum physics has this notion called the observer effect. There's certain ways that we can harness the observer effect and use it to direct what possibilities, which are infinite, come out of the quantum field. And so, by our mind and our thoughts and our expectations, all of these things influence what we manifest from the infinite possibilities of the quantum field.
Quantum mechanics tells us that...
Pause. No question.
This is a quick comment. I love... It's like whenever she was saying how this is all based in like ancient teachings and ancient wisdom. And it's really fucking cool because it's basically like... spirituality has always known that it's real, and science is just now catching up to all of this.
Yeah.
Like, all of the fucking, like, Buddhist and ancient Zen teachings and whatever, like, they were literally all like, yeah, you're creating your reality from within. As you observe it, it changes depending on what, like, your internal state is. Like, yep, this is how things work. We're all one. And then now science is like, oh my God, we're all one. And everyone's like, yeah, bitch, we know.
Yeah. I feel like there has to be a meme photo that would perfectly depict that.
Yeah, literally, it's like, this is what we've been saying.
Yeah. It. I mean, this is what I'm learning in the program that I'm in, is that consciousness evolves in cycles. So we like to think that we are so advanced, that we are the most advanced technologically, the most technologically advanced society to the date, to this date. Like, this is it. What we with our little fucking AI things. And when in reality, if you think back to like ancient civilizations with like the Mayan ruins and the pyramids, like they were tapped in to a level of understanding themselves and the technology that lives within us to a completely different level than what we are now. And a part of what I'm learning is that like this installation came in and totally wiped out our history and made us think that we are this specific state of like consciousness by programming us with what we're learning in schools and all these things. And there were so many other civilizations before all of this came about, with us feeling so small and powerless, that we're so much more advanced. So to think of history as linear and we're just constantly going up and getting more and more advanced is not accurate. Like, we were way more advanced in a past time.
Okay, you can keep playing.
Things are either in a state of position, a particle, or a state of angular momentum, a wave. And that our perception of whatever it is, measuring the experiment, causes that to collapse. And this is often what's used to explain how thoughts can affect the real world. If I hold a particular vision in my mind with astounding clarity, I'm literally radiating out that information into the structure of space, which may, in fact, cause the entangled structure of particles outside of me to begin to match the vision that's going on inside of my head. I am in a two-way communication with the rest of the universe all the time.
The way that we do that is through the self-regulation of this soft technology within our bodies, feeding the heart the information, the feelings of gratitude, appreciation, care, compassion, that tell the brain what kind of chemistry to send into the body, is also an energetic signal that we are sending into the field around us.
What so many in the mainstream are missing that are studying this question of consciousness is what alternative science and parapsychology has been exploring and has known for decades, which is that our thoughts can affect matter. That's hugely important because it completely changes the way we think about what is the nature of consciousness. It's clearly not just an illusion or an epiphenomena produced by the brain. There's something more to it, because if there was not, how could it go outside of itself and affect, you know, physical systems? There's decades of research, very good research by qualified people, showing a statistically significant effect on sensitive physical systems that are correlated with conscious intention. There's just no way to explain these without expanding your perspective on what consciousness is. I believe that consciousness is the foundational level of reality itself. Some call it panpsychism, or the idea that mind is everything, that the entire cosmos is suffused with sentience, and that it's, in some sense, consciousness that gives rise to matter, not the other way around.
In the 1970s and 80s, the Stanford Research Institute conducted pioneering research into remote viewing and psychic phenomena. Notably involving...
Really thinking about that sentence, that consciousness creates matter, not the other way around.
It hit.
It really hits. And also when you think about the origins of the universe and how... It's not that we came from nothing. It's like the quote-unquote nothing that was there before... Before whatever fucking whatever the timeline is, was just infinite intelligence. It was just consciousness.
Yeah.
Not bound by our definition of solid matter. So That's what I think what it means when you think about the infinite intelligence that is running through us, like the oneness, we all came from the same place. Like, it's literally that the origins of life and Earth is all the way traced back to an original, like, blip of consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching, I think it was Greg Braden, his show, Missing Links. He was talking about that, and it was similar to what you were sharing in the last... Oh, wait, no, that wasn't an episode. I was going to say the cheese puff thing. We didn't release that yet. If you were to condense it all into one single form, it would make that little pea-sized piece of matter that was kind of like the pre-wreck of the...
Yes. So it's like literally, yeah, we are mostly just this infinite form of intelligence, consciousness, awareness, like whatever you would call it. And that's the thing that continues to create matter. And even just on a physical modern level, if you just literally think about any physical object, like man-made object that you are seeing, started as an idea. Like, yeah. I always think about that when I walk around the SpaceX rocket factory, is I'm like, this literally started as a vision or a sense or something in someone's mind and was turned into form.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that sounds like, yeah, duh. It's like, that's insane. Like, literally everything that you see around you started as a blip of consciousness, a little piece of intelligence.
Yeah.
That had no form and then was made into form.
Wild. I think the craziest part is when they talk about a particle going from wave, or an atom going from wave to particle, or wave to atom. I can't remember the way that they word it, but essentially when they're saying it's a wave, it's meaning it hasn't collapsed into matter yet. So it's kind of like the non-physical. Mm. If you're thinking about like limitless possibilities, everything's existing as a wave before it collapses into form. And it's so crazy to think about that the thing that allows that to collapse into form, the thing that creates the matter, is our consciousness. It's our thought. Like, it's our mind that causes it to collapse. And I don't think they go into detail in this episode, but they have done studies where they take out the observer, they take out the scientist from observing the atoms, and they don't function the same. They don't collapse into like particles. And that's just so wild to think about, that literally none of this would exist without consciousness, like without observing it. And that's essentially the double slit experiment.
Yeah.
Proved that as well, that the observer effect is real. And this is why manifestation and law of attraction works, is because when you're putting intention combined with emotion, and that's your frequency and your energy, you're creating an energetic field around you that is putting out a certain signature, causing wave particles to collapse into matter in a specific way.
Yeah. Dude, this means that whole riddle that's, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, doesn't make a sound, then it doesn't. The tree doesn't exist.
Yeah, right?
Because, like, that's like a made up... I mean, that riddle or whatever is based on the idea that we've all experienced and heard a tree before fall and seen a tree.
Right.
But effectively, the right answer to that is no. Because a sound is also the interaction of a wave onto your ear. It needs an observer to be real.
I think another crazy aspect of this is, like, when you get deeper into, like, humans haven't even, oh my God, like, the amount of information we have yet to even tap into about our abilities and the power that we hold, like, this is literally scratching the surface, that your thoughts cause particles to collapse.
Our brains ways to can't collapse. Even, like, understand it. I feel like this is why the advanced, like, civilizations of aliens have enormous heads, because we need bigger brains to comprehend this.
Well, they're also using technologies that they're like, come on, like, get with it. Like,
right. They're like, you guys are so silly in your little fucking playground over there.
Yeah, come literally on. Like, they're already doing like fucking telepathy. Like, they, that's how they communicate. They don't even use language. It's just like all telepathy, and they have like this function where they're able to like fucking compute anything. Like, it's
they just blink at each other. Our next podcast is just going to be advanced language, where Nikki and I just stare at each other and we're just like,
you got that?
Yes, very good, very good.
I was watching another Gaia show called Quantum Communication, and they were talking about how science has been studying this for a while, and this is like in the conspiracy realm here, but obviously governments know this information. They use fucking remote viewing.
Mm.
And they were saying how in the science world, like, it's very well known that it's like silenced. You don't talk about this. Like, you don't let people know about this. Because imagine everyone knew about their power that they hold to like fucking warp reality into whatever they want.
People would be like, fuck your taxes, I'm done.
I mean, that's why people who are tapped into this like awakening world tend to go on this non-conventional route of life, because yeah, they're like, fuck sure, that I can create whatever I want.
Yes, yeah, truly. Yeah, yeah, 100%.
All right, shall we?
Yeah.
Uri Geller, known for his mind over matter abilities, like spoon bending. Key figures in this project included physicists Russell Targ and Harold Puthoff, who sought to scientifically test these abilities under controlled conditions, and Dr. Christopher Kit Green, who was involved in assessing the research's implications for the CIA. This research was codenamed Project Stargate, a U.S. government program to investigate psychic phenomena for potential military and psychic spying applications.
The experiments in Stanford Research Institute conducted by these scientists for the
Mystifier.
CIA.
That's my new title. Defense Department.
Love it.
They were all done under controlled, laboratory controlled conditions. Actually, one of the scientists, Russell Targ, was a magician, so he knew trickery and so on. They built a Faraday cage, or maybe they already had a Faraday cage at Stanford, and I sat in this Faraday cage in this shielded room. Now, while these experiments were going on, I managed to affect the computers in the basement of Stanford. The rumor is that I erased computer tapes, and that's when the CIA say, what? He can erase computer tapes with his mind. And then I did experiments with floppy disk, where I put my hand over the floppy disk, because there were floppy disks then, and I would erase the information. This was vital for the CIA, because later on I did erase computer tapes that KGB agents were taking out of Mexico City with secret information.
What?
The idea of thoughts shaping consciousness is a very controversial area, and I would argue much of this was classified until it was released by my colleague Russell Targ in 1995. But prior to that, Stanford Research Institute, the most predominant think tank, specialized in mind over matter studies. This is illustrated in a book that my wife and I co-wrote with Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher, one of the leading mathematicians and physicists. In short, this book is the real X-Files story of how consciousness can be seen as a tool of communication.
In the realm of conscious intention studies, Lynn McTaggart has emerged as a pivotal figure. Her groundbreaking mass intention experiments have demonstrated the remarkable power of focused thoughts, guiding small groups in harnessing their collective intentions. McTaggart has evidenced significant impacts on the safety and well-being of communities across the globe. Her work does more than illuminate the profound influence of concentrated thought. It reshapes our understanding of its capacity to alter reality.
I don't deal in mass meditation. I deal in mass intention. And the reason it's different has a lot to do with what happens in the brain when you do an intention in a group, whether it's the small groups which are I call power of eight, or thousands of people around the world who've taken part in my 40 plus intention experiments. What happened?
I want to start doing something in the OMIs community where we like come together and have some sort of intention setting. And
that's so beautiful.
I feel like it'd be powerful for them to obviously listen to this episode before to understand like what it is we're creating, and maybe we can think of like a mission that we could connect that with, of like what we want to create, or the intention that we want to have, the intention for the intention.
So yeah, dude, it's incredible. These studies are insane, like where they have people in cities like group meditate, and then they literally track that the crime rate goes down. Like, it's nuts, but it's like
crazy.
Hello, that's the vibe, like change in vibration, change in matter. Like, yeah, that would be really beautiful. I'd love to do that actually as a community, even just like, I don't know, once a month, once a quarter, like getting together and just having like really pure, like 30 minutes or whatever of like sending out a vibration, an intention, love, gratitude, acceptance. Like, I feel like it'd be cool to also like target it towards something, a specific cause or some like, I don't know, something that is very focused.
Right.
It'd be really cool.
Yeah. By the way, I'm so excited for our call tomorrow with Jenny.
Oh my God. It's going to be epic.
Yeah.
It's going to be lit.
If you guys haven't joined our community membership, join.
It's lit. It's fucking the best incredible. Place ever.
Tomorrow we have our March workshop with Jenny Adishian, who's going to teach us how to channel.
Yeah.
And it's going to be lit. I'm so excited. All right. Let's dive back in.
Is parts of the brain involved in making us feel separate turn off. They are dialed way down. Parietal lobes that sit in the back.
This is what I was saying with Taylor Swift. The parts of my brain that make me feel separate were turned on.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah, I've, yeah, it's, for, I mean, it's fucking real for sure. Like, I think it's hard to like doubt that. We all feel it. Like, we go in and out of like, yeah, it's just like the remembering and the forgetting. You're like, oh, I'm separate. Oh, fuck. No, I'm not. I'm one. Oh, I'm feeling separate. Oh, no, I'm one.
I'm also learning more about the brain through Greg Braden's series. And the right side, that's what they said, is the more the separate one, right? That thinks of everything. What's the logical side of the brain?
Left.
Left. So your left side is the one that's seeing everything as separate and thinks very logically. And then the right side is what's connected to your heart. So when you are detaching from fear-based thoughts and like very rigid logical thinking, and you connect to your heart space, you're activating the right side of the brain, where you have access through the heart intelligence, which is connected to higher realms and higher forms of awareness. So the right side of the brain, the way that you activate that is through creativity, it's through play, it's through imagination, and that's where you're really like activating that heart space energy flow, and that's where you're going to be able to see into like different realities and different timelines and like your highest self. So you want to really work towards activating the right side of your brain to facilitate the connection of the heart, and then you have the heart lead the way as opposed to the logical fucking doy 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 fear-based mind.
Doi, doi, doi.
Girl, 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 girl. I always do that.
Space. They are dialed way down. So are the right frontal lobes that are involved with worry, doubt, and negativity. So in a...
Wait, did I say the opposite? Is it left?
Well, she was saying the right frontal... Right frontal is worry. Wait, go back and replay that part because I kind of got cut out. I just worry she's talking about the brain.
Involved in making us feel separate, turn off. They are dialed way down. Parietal lobes that sit in the back of the head, they help us navigate through space. They are dialed way down. So are the right frontal lobes that are involved with worry, doubt, and negativity. So in a mass intention experiment, what we've measured using neuroscientists and measuring brain waves is that people doing this are in a state of ecstatic oneness. The brainwave signatures are almost identical to those that have been studied by the University of Pennsylvania on Sufi masters involved in chanting and also Buddhist monks involved in ecstatic prayer. So our people are in a state of ecstatic oneness, what Abraham Maslow, the famous psychologist, called peak experiences.
Oh, it's the book I started.
Lynn McTaggart wrote a book entitled The Field, describing the existence of a field that underlies all of creation and our relationship to that field that underlies all existence that we are a part of. The success for peace as well as healing tells us that this relationship exists. It's beyond coincidence that these things are happening. And it opens the door to a very, very different way of thinking for all of us. As we choose to have peace in our world and peace in our communities and our societies, the healing in the bodies of our loved ones, we are only powerless victims if we choose to be. And if we choose to actively participate in the beautiful outcomes we know are possible, we now have the avenue, the pathway, the tools and the techniques that tell us precisely how to do that.
One of the amazing things that I've seen with my intention experiments in particular are physical healings. When people do intention for somebody else or something else, this has occurred particularly with my peace intention experiments. But with every intention experiment, when I've surveyed people, I've discovered not only are their lives more peaceful, but a third to 40% report some sort of illness is completely healed or they're better. And I've thought about that. I've also thought a lot about the fact that their lives become more peaceful.
This is not just an idea. We have seen change in blood pressure, people who are, for example, with heart disease. We have seen those who practice transcendental meditation. Over 5 years, there is 45% less accidents.
I want to add here something that I learned through, I think, Sarah. The reason why there's so much healing that happens when you are meditating and you're accessing these states of like peace and you're connecting with an intention is because of the nervous system. Like when you're in that rest and digest state, your body literally releases like a whole cocktail of like healing chemicals.
Yeah.
And when so many people are in this like fucking activated state of just being in that fight or flight, your body is in survival mode and it's not releasing those chemicals. So like doing this mindfulness work and tapping into your heart space and allowing yourself to like shift an energetic frequency by accessing that energy field and tapping into that fucking heart chakra, that what's literally the most powerful energy center in the body, like that emulates throughout your entire vessel and shifts the way that it projects outward. Like your energetic field is literally what is causing the projection of your body.
Yes.
So like when you affect the energy, it affects the representation of the body and what it's dealing with.
Right.
So I feel like those are two things that are like really powerful like, now.
It's literally like, that's why just like illness and sickness instead of just being in a state of dis-ease. Like, like our bodies literally know how to heal. They know how to function. But if you're not creating the environment for it, it will scream and shout in symptoms until you finally come back to a place of peace and calm and restfulness. And then the body's like, oh, fucking thank you. Now I can do my job.
Yeah. We're not meant to be so fucking activated all the time.
Yeah. It's really good to remember, just even for like your health, to like literally take a chill pill, not an actual one, a meditative one.
Right.
Be highly, you got to get highly meditated.
I, in one of these shows that I've been watching, they were talking about how when you have all this stress in your mind, it gets to a point where like your mind can't hold that much energy, so then it sends it to specific parts of the body. Mm-hmm. And that's where you'll have like certain physical ailments manifest, yes, in certain parts of the body due to like a specific emotion. And yes, that's how they can align, like, oh, you're dealing with like financial stress, you're gonna have fucking lower back pain and all these things that are aligned with certain energies, because those energies, yes, are certain frequencies that they can detect.
It's, yeah, fucking crazy. And it gets like passed through the fascia system of the body. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of the heart and less deaths even. That is even those who practiced irregularly. And when we looked at those who practiced twice a day regularly, there was as much as 66% reduction in accidents and strokes and cardiovascular disease and in deaths also. So the effect is very real. It's very much studied and followed up and scientifically demonstrated.
The power of our thoughts extends far beyond personal well-being, reaching into the fabric of society itself. This profound impact is encapsulated in the Maharishi Effect, a concept introduced by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. It suggests that collective meditation isn't just a personal sanctuary, but a transformative tool capable of reducing societal issues such as crime and violence, benefiting both individuals and communities at large.
This is what we have been studying for now 50 years through different experiments. We have found that when a small percentage of people practice the transcendental meditation together, or even separately depending on the number of people, there are changes that happen in society. There is a decrease in conflict, decreased accidents of the road, decrease crime and problems, and followed up by scientific analysis and statistics.
So the Maharishi Effect showed that if at least 10% of the population of a local area were to come together and meditate in a group coherent field, they could have a significant impact on the level of harmony within that region.
There's also like so many different levels of thought with that one concept and that study. Yeah. Like even thinking about from a logical standpoint, why someone who would meditate would be less likely to take part in crime. And I know they're kind of getting at more of like it's sending out the frequency that's causing a change in the reality. But if people did meditate, I also feel like that
for
would...
Sure.
cause a decrease in crime, because people would be more like if the criminals were meditating. That's what,
yeah,
I'm getting at.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think this is why they do meditation and a lot of spiritual practices in prisons and stuff, because it's, you know, really, I think for most, in most if not all cases, exhibiting crime or violence or any act that really hurts another is due to a spiritual misalignment.
Right. And when you meditate, it's like you're connecting more to your heart, whereas mm-hmm. when you're not meditating, you're connected more to that side of the brain that's strictly focused on survival and seeing things as separate, and then all of a sudden it becomes like a fucking power struggle, like stealing things for survival, like war, creating freaking, I don't know, it's just like a never ending.
Yeah. All of the.
They need to like teach
meditation.
I'm going to
say something controversial and I'm fucking here for it. All of the fucking CEOs at Pfizer need to meditate.
I was going
to
say everyone in the White House.
Yeah.
The government needs to meditate.
Dude, seriously.
No, but like literally everyone in that type of position, whether it be in big pharma or the government, is just focused on power.
Yeah.
Like, of course they're not seeing us as one.
Not at all. Yeah.
Ongoing research into the Maharishi Effect uncovered a remarkable shift. The effective percentage needed decreased, first to 1%, and then astoundingly to even less than 1%. According to the theory,
even a small, coherent group meditating together with a unified purpose can create a significant field of positive coherence extending beyond the group, influencing and benefiting the wider community.
For example, a laser beam is a very coherent beam of light. The frequencies of light can be exactly the same like any bulb producing light. The difference between laser and the light is that the waves are coherent together. What is interesting is that it's enough that a small percentage, even 1% or less, there is a formula, that become coherent, and then all the other waves align themselves and become coherent also.
At our Gaia studio, consciousness researcher and AI developer Adam Curry set up a simple intention experiment. Including the six production crew members who were present, they collectively focused their positive thoughts and emotions, like love and gratitude, on one of two water vials for about 3 minutes. These vials were connected to an electrointerstitial scan machine, recording the water's impedance, a measure of molecular coherence.
So this is a very progressive and interesting mind-matter interaction experiment that I'm going to demonstrate. So I'm adding just plain bottled water, and we're going to measure the conductivity in each, and we'll show that there's a significant difference in the vial of water that received our intention. 10 milliliters into the other one. And now the impedance spectrometer is connected to a computer, so we're gonna run a baseline. So now we have a baseline, and we're gonna pick one of these vials to send our intention to for a couple of minutes. So we've chosen to send our intention into this vial here. Now you can pick however you'd like to send your intention. You could send the intention to be that the water becomes more coherent. You can send it love, you can send it gratitude or appreciation, all of these things work. The point is that you want to direct your intention into the water vial for a couple of minutes.
What's crazy is the only reason this seems...
So now that
seems...
we've sent our intention into the vial, we're going to re...
The only reason this seems crazy is just because it's not the norm to know this.
Yes.
But, like, I'm watching this and I'm like, yeah, checks out. Like,
I know.
I'm gonna be teaching my 2-year-old about this. Be like, this is how it works. Like, that's, like, all it... It's literally just like our fucking mainstream norms are just fucked up and stupid. Like, they're just not, like, I'm watching this and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. But someone else would be like, this is so kooky. Like, what are you talking about? And the only reason they say that is just because we're so disconnected from this lens on reality.
Agreed. Agreed. It's pretty wild. Like, once you start... going so far into like learning this information and then you like talk about it casually in front of someone who's like not so deep in it and you're like, oh fuck, I sound like a crazy person and they're gonna stick me in a psych ward.
Oh, me when I remember when this is a funny side story, I was visiting you and Nikki and Peter were like offering me a can of water and it was liquid death water and I was like, I refuse to drink liquid death because water has consciousness. And you guys were like, it's probably not that bad. And I was like, I'm not fucking drinking this unstructured death water.
Well, now, I mean, I didn't know the information back then, but now I'm like totally seeing your perspective. I'd be curious if like that would be actually a thing to think about.
I do think probably that water, again, for one, you can argue like death, we view it as like this negative thing, but I do think like the imagery on the can with it being like a melted skull generally elicits a more fearful energy, which if water, as we know, because water has consciousness, that I do think that water is definitely more fractured than like another type of water that has been either intended upon in a certain way or it's just literally more coherent. So like for sure I think that is like real. Obviously, is it gonna make you die if you drink it? Probably not, but you know,
maybe
for sure
though.
Like it has an effect on it.
Yeah. I actually haven't ever done the thing of like saying affirmations to my water. Have you?
I actually bought a whole like Petri dish kit to try out where you, because I was learning about this back in.
You showed like, me that girl's Instagram that does all the Veda Petri Austin. Dish.
Yeah, dude, it's insane. Actually, we should totally have her on the pod. But yeah, I like learned about this during all the like COVID times. And yeah, you like literally, I wasn't able to do it because like my fucking freezer situation and the dishes and whatever. But yeah, basically I tried it once. I wasn't able to successfully do it. I would love to try it again though and like properly, you know, put the intention on the water and then look for the like symbol in it. But I've definitely like, you know, when I'm sick for sure, I put a lot more intention into the food and water that I drink and I like bestow like healing powers upon it. Mm. I've definitely tried to do that.
Yeah, I feel like that works wonders for you. You've like harnessed such a strong belief in your own healing abilities when it comes to like being sick.
For sure. I was telling a friend about that who's been feeling sick a lot lately. And she was like asking me for advice. And I was like, I'm just going to give it to you straight. I fully have transitioned to like thinking about my health as a purely energetic situation. And when I'm sick, I'm like full on energy mode. And I'm like, yes, I'm eating all the right things. But I also am like literally using my own hands to send my like throat healing energy in my ears. And I also just think about it as like a spiritual initiation. She was like, damn, okay, I think I need to try that out.
Truly though. Yeah, if you like have the mindset that you are in the process of healing, you'll always be in the process of healing. But right. If you tell yourself, I'm healed, you know, like the story around it too is also very powerful.
But yeah, you're telling yourself or you're just sick, like that it's not, right, or that it's just people, whenever people have like a cold or symptoms, they just view it as this hugely like disempowering victim thing where they're like, oh God, like my life. Oh my God, my kid's coming home and he's sick. Like what a nuisance to my life. Instead of being like, my body is so intelligent that it's expressing something through physical symptoms as an opportunity for it to get stronger. Mm. But we're so negatively conditioned with our health and wellness that we immediately band-aid that and we like take Tylenol to suppress the fever. We like take antibiotics to like, we just literally do exactly the opposite of supporting the body in its natural healing. And so then people get more sick all the time and then get to a point where it's like, they feel like you don't have a choice because you got to go to work and you got to take care of kids and stuff. But it's like, I believe that if you let yourself, like essentially if you go through one or two times of really fully not taking like any over-the-counter meds, nothing like that, and you go through the fire of a physical sickness, obviously this is like within the realm of like having a bad cold or flu or whatever, that then you will not get sick as often, and when you do, you get over it so much faster.
Maybe that's why Peter has such a ability to like when he got COVID, he was done with it in like a day, because whenever he's sick he puts on all this like clothing and like gets in bed and he's like, I just need to sweat it out. Like,
probably.
Like, okay, do you, it works. Okay, shall we continue?
Yeah.
Run the EIS machine and see if there's any differences between the two samples. On the screen you'll see a red line, the sample of water into which we sent our intention, and a black line, the control. And what you'll see here is that there's almost a 2 kilo-ohm difference in the conductivity of the water. I believe that this experiment is one of several that are really going to represent the future of consciousness research with respect to mind-matter interaction. We're starting to see that there might be something like the emergent explanation or a framework for understanding how mind-matter interaction might be possible.
Remarkably, after the intention session, the treated vial showed a 30% spike in resistance, a significant decrease in impedance compared to the control. These findings, achieved with identical water samples and equipment, demonstrate the profound impact of collective consciousness on physical matter, suggesting potential quantum-level interactions.
If you become convinced that thoughts can affect matter, either through the experiments or through looking at your own life, there are new possibilities that open up, one of which is called subtle activism. And that's where yourself and groups of other people, in some coordinated way in your community or around the world, get together and they have coherent thoughts, maybe coherent thoughts with an intention. For example, world peace or nuclear de-escalation or the reduction of crime or the healing of somebody who's sick. So there does seem to be something to this idea that there's a collective consciousness and that the introduction of coherent thinking, of coherent and pointed consciousness, actually can drive effects in the world.
I'm gonna pause really quick.
Further evidence suggesting the.
I really like that idea about, I think, what do you call it, passive activism or something? No. Mm. What do you call it?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, yeah. It's like, instead of. Cause I feel like where things get really weird with activism is people are ultimately just projecting their own definition of what is good and correct onto other people, versus with this idea, it's so much more energy based, and it kind of like leaves room for the universe to, like, we can't always, it's really hard to, it's like kind of a right and wrong thing, and like an understanding of, we don't always know what is actually the right way for something to work out, but if we are putting in the intention of love and peace and gratitude, then whatever that outcome is must be for our highest good. So it's kind of different from typical traditional activism, which is so based in like my opinion and my way of doing things is the best way to solve this problem, and I'm going to go out and make sure that everybody gets on board with me. And instead it's like, let me put out the vibration of love and acceptance and like of this high order of, you know, peace, and then let universal forces bring that into form in whatever way is the best for humanity.
Mm.
And so it's so much more in line with, yeah, just almost like the trust and like the being in more coherence with oneness versus being like, I need to save you in my way. And if I, you know, it's like actually out of fear in a way to do that sort of more like aggressive form of activism versus focusing on the high level vibration that you want to achieve and then letting universal forces kind of like sort it out.
I'm so happy that you're bringing this up because this is exactly what like people think is actually going to change the world. They think that staying in a state of anger and not yet accepting the situation for what it is and allowing yourself to enter back into a soul-based place, they think acting out of ego and fear and anger and putting that energy out there is what's going to cause a change. But what you put out is what you get back. So if you're always just putting out the anger and the frustration and you're thinking that like you're with your fucking like picketing and stuff, like it's not going to have the same impact. Right. If you were to go into a state of acceptance, and this isn't to say that it can't change, but to like shift yourself into a place of non-resistance. Essentially, we're just saying the same thing. I'm totally agreeing with you that like this way is so much more powerful because it takes you from being a victim to being a co-creator, being like, wait, I don't need to fight reality and resist what's going on because that means that we're separate. I can actually influence what's going on by surrendering into what's happening and then choosing to put out the intention and the energy of what you want to create. Right. I mean, imagine they taught this in school.
Yeah. And it's just so, it's also just like a subtle energetic shift that even if you were to continue doing the same actions, they would change. Like, I just feel like it's more rooted in, there's less ego involved because you're not putting yourself on this pedestal of, I am going to save the day and I know exactly what we need to do. And more that energy that you, this is kind of the energy I feel from like the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. And it's like, they're not necessarily like, yes, they have their very strong like perspectives and opinions on like this versus that, whatever. And like, that's like all fine. But ultimately, they're really coming to conflicts with this sense of like forgiveness and love and acceptance for their enemy, which is so hard to do. Mm. But that's why it has such a bigger impact, is because that level of activism is like, you kind of like get it on the higher level. And that's because you know how it really works versus how you think it works down here, which is fighting. I need to exert my power over you and get my way going to fix this, versus actually like, there's a higher order here. And if we align ourselves with that, that will create the change that we seek.
Right. Powerful. Very powerful.
The impact of thoughts and emotions on the physical world comes from the Japanese alternative medicine practitioner, Dr. Masaru Emoto. In the late 1990s, Emoto's experiments involved photographing water crystals that were exposed to a range of emotional stimuli, from positive to negative thoughts. His work suggests that these emotions could materially affect the water's crystalline structure, thus raising a significant implication. If our thoughts can affect the quality of water externally, does that suggest that our thoughts can affect the state of our bodies, which are approximately 60% water?
Where the positive emotions like love and gratitude were transmitted to the water, it formed beautiful, symmetric water crystals, you know, that look kind of like snowflakes, but they were slightly different. And then there was the ones where it was negative energy, like hate or anger. It was distorted. It didn't form a beautiful pattern of symmetry, which most water crystals would naturally form symmetry. But, you know, it was very clear that there was toxicity put into it by our human emotion or thought that was given to that water.
If you want to change your state of health, your state of strength, or any aspect of your body, it simply requires changing the level of thinking and communication that you're doing with your own body. Many of us send our bodies judgments all the time. We condition our bodies by giving ourselves hard feedback, telling ourselves the things we should be or should do better. When we change this to teaching and entraining our bodies to the idea that we are healthy, that we are strong, that we are good people, that we are beautiful, we actually create the conditions in our body to have that experience in life.
Another compelling example demonstrating the influence of thoughts on healing and well-being is the phenomenon of the placebo effect.
The placebo effect is a really great example of how our thoughts can affect our outcome. I mean, the typical example is that they're running a clinical trial upon a
particular... I know. Well, Joe Dispenza is out there trying to make it popular, but it's still like...
that new medicine, and then they have a control group of people who get a sugar pill. And the group that's getting the actual medicine needs to show that there's an effect that is greater than the placebo effect. And the placebo effect shows that basically about half the people who got the sugar pill believed that they were getting the actual pill and their conditions improved.
The placebo effect is massive. Everyone agrees that it's massive, right? But if you look at the mind-matter interaction experiments, you start to see how you can maybe provide an explanation for this. If it's your belief systems that are extending out into your body, maybe affecting the water in your body, which in turn affects the balance of signaling solutions and salts in your body, which in turn affects different type of chemical processes and so forth, you could really be driving outcomes ultimately based on your own belief systems and your own internal reactions to things.
The idea that thoughts can change matter opens up a realm of intriguing implications and possibilities.
The broadest implication is that the power is in your hands, that you get to step into the driver's seat of your life and you become that creator of your life. And I think that's the most important thing, is to recognize that the power is within. So be responsible for your thoughts.
And I believe that we can literally, by our mind, transform and heal the planet, bringing peace to various places, literally by thinking, by changing, by projecting ourselves there and transforming the energy of consciousness that's negative into energies of peace, understanding, and compassion.
As a practical everyday note, just remember that if your thoughts are influencing the matter around you, they're also influencing the people around you. So how you hold others in your mind is important. The way you think about them, it can actually affect how they feel and what's going on inside of them. We are more telepathic than we imagine. And with telepathy comes telekinesis. And this is a power that we must learn how to harness very carefully, consciously, and with great ethical consideration.
If you spend enough time either researching the science or looking at your own life objectively, I think you will come away with the knowledge that your thoughts have power. You've got real consciousness that's connected to everything and everyone, and I don't think that it takes much to engage in subtle activism and really push towards peaceful, better alternatives in ways that there are no power structures really that can interfere with it. One should feel empowered by this information, and also one should practice it.
Every one of the cells in my body right now, and your bodies are watching us, are collapsing and emerging into the field. That means the field's not out there. We are the field. And what that suggests is that what we choose to experience in the world, we must become within ourselves. And this is one of the most fundamental principles. If we want that change out there, how do you feed the change out there? You become the change because you're feeding the field.
In a world where thoughts can shape reality, what does this mean for the future of humanity?
That's like that scene from that movie with the floating spaceship.
Which one?
That movie.
Oh, Arrival?
Yeah.
Are we ready to embrace the power that lies within our own minds? This notion not only redefines our understanding of personal and global well-being, but also invites us to step into a future where our conscious intentions are integral to shaping our collective destiny. Join us for more episodes on Divine Science, where we continue exploring the crossroads of modern research and ancient wisdom.
Dude, that's making me feel inspired as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just like this ending, the way they're like summarizing all of it. It's just like, you're like, yeah, anything is fucking possible.
Literally. I got this. Yeah, like what? I know you just shared a little bit, but like, what's your overall vibe when you watch this?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, sometimes you just forget how much you need like a little inspo, a little like something to sink your teeth into to like really get in that right energy. And yeah, I'm just kind of remembering like, this is why this information is so fucking powerful. And I can imagine this is why people love tuning into our show every week, which I'm so grateful for. It's just like a constant like re-tapping into the right vibration. And yeah, it's just like, you need it. Cause I mean, I've just been thinking about what we were talking about yesterday. Was I've been just like going through a lot of discomfort with this new level essentially that I'm like climbing to in terms of like myself and career and all the things. And there's times when it feels just like overwhelming and you're just like, oh God, like you just get a little into like you just get overwhelmed by like the visions or what you know that you are feeling called to do, but there's resistance. But then you watch something like this and it's just putting me back into like that realm of empowerment and like I can do it and like it's actually not that hard and like it's totally within my grasp and my reach. And yeah, it's just really reminding me of my own power and that the things that I want to create, I literally just have to put conscious thought behind and take the actions from there, and that's it.
Yes. And whenever something's not a positive outcome in our reality or something that we're not desiring, it's an opportunity to look at the subconscious and be like, wait, what am I projecting out into the field? Like, mm-hmm. what is the depth of like my mind projecting out into the field that's causing whatever to manifest? And you play life like it's a game, and it becomes like a little, like a treasure hunt. And you don't take it so personal because you know that those programs aren't even yours to begin with. And to see life that way, it makes it so fun and immersive and like just this big fucking experience, this big game that you get to play. And emotions are definitely a part of the human experience, but they are not natural to who we truly are. Like lower emotions, they're part of the human experience and they're part of our very divine path of learning and evolving, but they're not natural to the true essence of who we are. And I think when we're feeling emotions, it's very easy to like think that this is just who I am, like I'm feeling this emotion and it's like the end of the world. And I know I can sometimes get in this state too, when like you're in that state of just like anxiety or like wanting to get out of low, even like resisting being in a lower vibration. It's just like it's not who we truly are. We can be with it and still have access to the divine and to the love and to the compassion and to the power. Like we can still observe that and be one with who it is we actually are, like our true essence. But I agree, this information, freaking whenever you're feeling like you're in a low, lean into the things that raise your consciousness. Like you want to be able to get up on the diving board and see your emotions from a higher perspective. And that is like a key when you're navigating a low in life, when you're feeling all the emotions. The number one thing you can do is to lean into the very specific things that allow you, whatever those things are for you, that shift you into a higher state of awareness, whether it be calling up the friend that just like gets it and is able to shift you there, a freaking Gaia show, a podcast. I mean, this is why having like a coach is so fucking powerful, because that's like weekly meetings where you're just like remembering, remembering. That's what I have to say about that.
Amen, sister.
What you put in your mind is what you will get out. So monitor your Taylor Swift intake.
I'm like, fuck, do I need to take her off of my goddess playlist?
No, I mean, this is all personal experience. I think I'm going to retract what I was saying before about not agreeing. Your experience is your experience. And we can all have very, very different experiences of the same thing. Like, I agree with what you were saying. It's all about perception. And maybe my perception subconsciously was that this is going to negatively impact me. So that's exactly what happened.
I think there's elements of truth to both of it, but both perspectives. But yeah, for sure. It's, yeah.
Well, you have a lot to ponder now.
I'm feeling jazzed. I want to like put on some music and fucking dance around. I got to get my 10 minutes in of dance practice a day.
Yeah. Love it. But also like, one more thing. When you learn this information and you hear the science behind it, it makes the journey of like meditating and doing the things I've found in my own life, like there's a joy behind it. There's like a desire to do it, because now when I'm meditating, it's like, oh, I have this opportunity to connect to this consciousness that's like connected to this higher consciousness that I can receive information from and wisdom from. And I even notice when I'm laying in bed, I'll lay there before falling asleep and I'll just like tap into my breath and I'll be like, okay, maybe I can do like a little channeling session right now.
Yeah, dude, for sure. Yeah. I'm really like, yeah, man, I feel like a lot of people are really in that. I'm having like a compassion moment for myself and like anyone who just, it's hard. We just like easily forget how important it is to be a conscious consumer and creator, because there are a lot of fucking forces distracting you. Like this shit is hard. Like I'm just realizing myself right now how much I've let I've just had a lot of energetic leakages around my like creator energy, if you will. And it's just hard. Like there's so much pulling our attention, so much conditioning. Like it's just a lot. So I'm kind of just having like a compassionate moment towards myself and seeing a lot more clearly how important it is to take it seriously when you have that intuition to, yeah, hold yourself to, I don't know what the word is, like hold yourself to a higher standard slash change of practices. Yeah, it's bring devotion. More like intention into your day-to-day consumption and doing the things that really raise your vibration, because that's how you end up doing better work and like you fulfill your purpose more and you just fucking feel good. And I think we easily forget what it's like to be in that high state because there's so much noise and buzz and distraction to pull you into the opposite.
Right. And sometimes going down is divine.
For sure. I mean, 100%. I mean, we literally cannot have up without down. So,
yeah, I agree. The compassion is essential. It really is. Like, we live in an insane world where there is so much working against us to remember, you know, like, to cause us to forget. So, yeah, I mean, this is the fucking journey. Compassion is definitely essential. I agree. Alrighty. Well, you have any last thoughts?
No, that was lit. Thank you guys for tuning in. We love you so much. If you're looking for a high vibrational community of incredible awakened souls, the Omis Oasis is for you. We created it for this purpose, for bringing together people that are on this journey. It's such a special sacred space. We do workshops every single month. We have an incredibly beautiful and active Slack channel where people share what they're going through, resources, stories, all the things. It's so beautiful. So definitely check it out in the description. We would love to have you inside.
Amazing. Bye, guys. We'll see you next Wednesday.